Beware, spoiler phobes, it's still 2016. This week, mere days before the end of the year, myself, Joanna, and Neil have each picked five television shows of note from broadcast and streaming to highlight as 2016's best television. Yeah, someone chose Game of Thrones, so no worries there. But we're mostly reviewing, not spoiling, with the implicit agreement that you'll check some of this out. So, without further ado, let's close it out with the best television of 2016. The age of miracles, the age of sound. Well, there's a golden age coming round, coming round, coming round. Hello and welcome to the Storm of Spoilers off season tour. This week we will be discussing the best television of 2016 as selected by our panel. I'm Dave Gonzalez and I'm joined by
Joanna Robinson
and Neil Miller.
Hey, we're the trio with the, I wish I knew more words than rhyme with trio.
Brio.
With the brio, that's like what? Warm cheese that we
Is
all
that-
have.
No, that's no. Brie, and then there's like brioche buns. No, now I'm hungry.
Brio means, wait, hold on. I'm just looking this up to make sure I'm right.
Okay. None of us are rappers.
Brio means vigor and vivacity of style or performance.
What, seriously?
Oh, the trio with the
yeah.
Brio?
Yeah.
Oh, god damn, Joanne is a rapper. Good to know. I could have had a better intro. This week, we're going to be all... We've each picked five television shows whose 2016, I guess, seasons? We haven't quite discussed it. Whose 2016 seasons or representations have been the best. The best of 2016. It's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, the best of 2016.
I guess I could have just said that right off the top.
But it's okay.
But you had to say it with some brio.
Yeah, that's right. We wouldn't have gotten brio, so it's all worthwhile. But first, Joanna, do we have any reviews for this week?
We do. I'm so nervous. Here we go. this is from Counterpoint 8732. 5-star review. Well worth your time. I'm from Texas, so compulsory Texan accent, Joanna. Gotta keep the shtick alive. I've listened to this podcast since its inception and can't say enough good things about it. I won't ramble about the show itself too much other than to say you'd be doing yourself a great favor by listening. The hosts make it all worthwhile. Everyone should be huge fans of Dave if they know what's good for them. Love all your work and the contributions you make to each podcast you represent. Neil won me over quickly with his personality and perspective. And lastly, the demigod living among us, Joanna. I may disagree with you on some issues, but I always find your thoughts and perspectives captivating. Again, keep up the great work, you three. I was so nervous to read that because last time I did a Texan accent, Neil was like, that was garbage fire. So
this one,
was more garbage fire.
I would say it's still a little more on the foghorn leghorn end of the scale. But you're getting there.
I do declare.
I feel like maybe, yeah.
I say.
I feel like you're still sort of in Georgia.
Yeah, so a little too julepy.
Really, what I'm saying is that we need to have more Storm of Spoilers retreats here in Texas. So that we can work on the accents.
Okay, sounds good.
Research tours to make sure this is done with the utmost professionalism.
I do declare.
I've got the vapors. Oh.
All right, guys. This episode is going to be slightly different schedule, so we're not going to take an ad break until after our first round of picks. Let's jump right into it. Joanna, I want to talk about Fleabag, which I have not yet made time for, but did make your list for the best of 2016, because this has to be the show that, like, this and Insecure people can't stop telling me I need to watch. Like, I'm missing a perspective.
Insecure is also super good. But the good news about Fleabag is it's only 3 hours total because it's 6 half-hour episodes. Thank you, England. So if you want to watch the entire first season on Amazon Prime, it will only take 3 hours of your time. It is a show written by and starring a British comedian named Phoebe Waller-Bridge. And I'm convinced that Neil, have you seen Fleabag?
No, sadly, even though many people have told me that I need to watch it.
I'm convinced that if Neil watches, I don't know why this just popped in my mind, but I'm convinced if Neil watches it, he will fall in love with Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
It doesn't even take me watching it. I saw one still and I was like, where do I get one? Where can I pick this girl up and carry her off and marry her?
Cause she's not only beautifully strong jawed and all of this stuff, but she is super brilliant. And the show is very dark. It's about this, 20 something woman, living in England. She is somewhat promiscuous. She kind of treats people in her life shittily, but then you find out there's a very good reason for her doing all that. It's very darkly funny. It's of the trend of quote unquote women behaving badly, but it's just one of the darkest, funniest things I've seen this year. I absolutely loved it. So yeah, see Fleabag, see it now. And the fact that this character, who's called Fleabag, was written by the same woman who's portraying her. And I got to interview her earlier this year, and she said she based, I think she's a much nicer person than this person, but she based a lot of the incidents on her own life. So, it has that, even though it's extreme and dark, it has a ring of authenticity to it that It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where everyone's a dickbag to each other, doesn't feel honest in any way. This feels very honest to this woman's experience. So I highly recommend 3 hours. Watch Fleabag.
Yeah, I like that. It's on my list.
Yeah, that time commitment seems good.
I know. Isn't it great? Do more of this, the world. I'm staring down the barrel of the OA on Netflix, and I'm like, I just can't do it. I can't do it. I feel like I can skip this one, So anyway.
Yeah, I knew that Fleabag was going to end up on my list when Chris Campbell, who writes for Film School Rejects, who hates everything, was in love with this show. And I was like, wait a minute, what? So that's, I think that's probably what I'm going to do over Christmas weekend, is watch Fleabag.
Yes.
If you agree to watch the movies we discussed last week in our Christmas special, I will
text you as soon as I watch Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
And then you will queue up Fleabag.
Yeah. I will have it watched by the time the new year is rung.
Okay.
Yeah. We had to blackmail Katie Rich into seeing Fleabag during her child care time, because apparently it was so good that we needed to talk about it. But we also wanted Katie to see it so she could be involved. And now that I'm hearing again that I've missed a train with all my friends seeing Fleabag on it, I gotta hop on that damn train.
Get on that Fleabag train.
Get on the Fleabag train.
3 hours. You could knock it out tonight if you wanted to. I'm just saying.
I could. The last train that I had to jump on to talk to you guys stuff about, because we actually had an episode on it, is one of Neil's picks, which he has Black Mirror as his outstanding. Actually, we did a couple of his stories, but let's do Black Mirror. Neil, what made Black Mirror better than everything else this 2016?
Well, for me, it was great to have Black Mirror back. It feels like the most sort of relevant time to have a Black Mirror. And I don't know. I was going through the Netflix shows, and there's two of them on my list. Spoiler alert. But, thinking about the TV that I've ingested, and, Black Mirror still stands out to me. I am most happy that Series 3 came out and it allowed other people to discover some of the older ones, because I feel like that was one of the things I heard most. So maybe this isn't necessarily about this season of Black Mirror being strong as much as it was strong enough to get people interested in what had come previously, which I think is really important because that stuff's really good. So, So I found it. My top five list is a combination of stuff I really liked, stuff that you could feasibly get some sort of critical consensus, and then stuff that I think did important work. And I think Black Mirror for sci-fi on television did some important work because it opened up some new audiences to the original Black Mirror series.
Yeah,
I like that.
I think it's this season I was really worried about it sort of tipping into like too American, and I think we discussed it a little bit, like, you know, on our Black Mirror episode, that once it, you know, got this huge exposure over here and became a Netflix property, that maybe some things were going to change about it. But not enough to make me dislike it, which is always nice to see.
When, it's still very British.
Know. Yeah, still very British. Just now, you know, has Bryce Dallas Howard and a very British mm-hmm. angle on technology. Mm-hmm. I dig it. And we have that episode we can talk about. If you are catching up on Black Mirror, make sure to check that out. For my first pick, I'm going to pick Atlanta on FX, the Donald Glover series that I've been waiting for a while, since he said he was not going to come back to Community as Trey, because he was instead going to develop
Troy.
A comedy series. Troy, thank you. Because he said he was going to develop a comedy series on for FX that ended up being Atlanta, which is... he likes to describe it as Twin Peaks with rappers, which actually is how the whole season ended up playing out. So not only is it funny, but it's very weird. So unlike other comedians doing very point of view series like Master of None, or Louis, Atlanta plays like Donald Glover knows what he's talking about, but isn't necessarily talking about himself. The show has a point of view that is trying to express through like little ticks from one week. There's just a show within a show where the rapper Paperboy, who's played by Brian Tyree Henry, appears on like a Charlie Rose like talk show.
So and good.
Then there's one episode where Justin Bieber was played by a black person, but it wasn't acknowledged in the story. That was just something we were supposed to realize, that how like unacceptable Justin Bieber's behavior would be if he was a young black man instead of a young white man. So little things like that, and then taking like an entire episode to flesh out Van, its female lead, really led Atlanta to like have a whole season that works together as like this hauntingly funny whole. And I think it ends in a way that I read at least as hopeful, but we'll see what future seasons have to say about whether or not this is going to be self-contained or not.
I predictably really loved the Van episode, but also we should mention the like fake commercials that were on the Charlie Rose episode. They like did nothing to distinguish them from the actual commercials in the ad break, and they were for like Swishers and like Arizona iced tea, and it's just so good. Yeah, that show's great. Great job, Donald Glover.
It's one that I'm in the process of finishing, because for some reason I didn't get it. I watched the screeners, so like the first four episodes or six episodes, and just got too busy with other stuff. And but I will say this, potentially one of the most cinematic TV shows, and that's weird to say about a show that doesn't involve like dragons or zombies or any of that crazy stuff, but there's just really there's a real cinema verite quality to it, but also very polished eye that I thought was really surprising, even for FX. FX usually has good production value, but really just well made show, like just top to bottom.
And we'll have more well made shows of 2016 after this break. And we're back. We're going to talk about Real Dragons now with Joanna's predictable pick of Game of Thrones. I have more specific questions for you instead of just let's talk about how good Game of Thrones is. This mm-hmm. season, Joanna, this season where the opening episodes were all us debating the same inevitability.
Yeah, no, my first
question is that even a question?
Yeah, no, I get it. I get what the question is. It's, the question is, at long last, how dare you? The first version of my top five list didn't have Game of Thrones on it. And then I was like, can we possibly do a best TV of the year on a Game of Thrones podcast and not talk about Game of Thrones? And then I'm like, would it be dishonest to include it just to pander to the Storm of Spoilers crew? And then I thought about it. I was like, you know, and this will be true for another entry on my list. And I've talked about this a lot in the context of Westworld. For me, you can talk about the best show in a bubble, in a bottle, Fleabag. All me watching it all by myself and not talking to anyone was an amazing experience. But the concept of discussion around a TV show and us all joyously watching the same thing at the same time and talking about it, matters to me in the way that I consume television throughout the year. So for that reason, Game of Thrones, and I'm just going to throw it in there, Westworld, are on my list just because they were these two, they were destination watch. People were watching them on Sunday nights. They're not watching them whenever. They're not catching up later. They're watching them on Sunday nights, and then we're all talking about it. And I find that really, really fun. And so, yeah, Game of Thrones, Westworld, these HBO Sunday nights institutions.
It's funny. I went through the same argument in my mind. And then once I saw that you had Game of Thrones on your list, I was like, cool, I can pick other shows.
Yeah, exactly. One of us had to do it. Yeah.
You're right. I mean, it might seem like pandering, but it's not a disingenuous thing to say that our show exists because of the fervor around Game of Thrones. And I think that at this point is the most fun. Also, I mean, Game of Thrones did some really badass stuff this year. That the battle at Winterfell was really cool. The final episode was, I mean, that might be at least the first 15-20 minutes of that finale might be the best.
If it hadn't been for that finale, if it had just been Battle of the Bastards, which I know we disagreed on, and I just did not like a lot of, even though it was a technical marvel. But that final episode, I thought was very good.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
season ended very strong, and even though it started, as Dave mentioned, with the question we all knew the answer to. So.
Right. The finale, I think, is a serious contender for best single episode of television this year.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I think the finale's up there. I would throw in the Hodor moment as definitely being one of my favorite moments of 2016, especially as people who discuss it constantly, to have that, hit so clear and be so of the show by using montage and whatnot, like we talked about, I believe, on the episode, was great. I'm not sure I could put this season on 2016's best seasons of television list.
I think that's fair.
There's a lot of other good TV.
There really is. Out there. And we're going to talk about it, but I did want to have Game of Thrones represented in this conversation. So, mission accomplished.
Westeros. Represent.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to come back for Westworld because I got questions about that too. You're all knowing this. But first, let's swing over to Neil, do I want to try to get him to sing about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
No.
Sure you do.
They changed the theme song this year, which is the only thing I didn't like about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
So now the only thing you didn't like about this year, or the only thing you previously didn't like, but now you like the new theme song?
No, I like the original, the season one theme song, and the season two theme song is just okay. I mean, it's funnier, it's a little more on the nose, but not as weird. It's one of those shows, what's that show? Cougar Town. Did you guys ever watch Cougar Town?
I love Cougar Town.
So love me some Cougar Town. I play Penny Can all the time.
Cougar Town Alley.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
The problem with Cougar Town, and they realized this very quickly, is that the name didn't match what the show became within the first season.
Yeah.
And I think that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend sort of suffers from this, where it's the name, it could be a totally different show about these people, that these characters that we just really love spending time with. And I think it will eventually become the next Cougar Town, in that as it goes forward, it's not going to be about her being a crazy ex-girlfriend of people. But it's still
it should just
really
be called like West Covina or something.
It should
like
just
that.
Be called like, well, that's, yeah, I don't know if people are going to watch that.
And then there's a problem with also Jane the Virgin has a similar problem.
Right. Because like what happens when Jane the Virgin has sex? Does she have sex yet?
She has had sex. So they had a whole thing about it where they like exploded the titles. You know, it was like exploded
Jane
the virgin
no longer
part.
The virgin.
Yeah. It was just like Jane exclamation mark. But yeah, the show is still obviously called Jane the Virgin. So anyway, choose your titles wisely, TV shows.
But anyway, so for those not familiar, this is the very much award-winning show that stars, and it was created by Rachel Bloom. And it's just really charming. It's infinite charm bottled up into 30-minute episodes. And season two, thus far, it's still going. Season two, the musical numbers, I feel, have taken another step forward. Like, there's a musical number in which she and another character, Greg, sort of sum up their on-again, off-again relationship-ness and sing about how it was a complete shit show. Just one of the best numbers that they've done. So I think that, yeah, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, of course, it's still really great. It's very hard for a show like this to get so much recognition after the first season and come back just as strong in season two. There's always that overhype factor, and it has navigated those waters really, really well. So
another big obstacle it had this year, and actually the reason why I stopped watching, I'll pick it back up, but I dropped it. Mm-hmm. It was because I was so mad that, I can't remember his name. Santor Fantina, is that right? Who plays Greg, has left the show. And mm-hmm. he was my favorite part of the show. And that's very unfeminist of me because, the main character should definitely be my favorite part of the show, but Greg was my favorite part of the show and he left. And sort of, you know, what's interesting is the original premise of this show was a love triangle, and then one leg of the love triangle just fucked off. So what they've done instead, by all reports, since I haven't watched it, is replace that kind of with a female friendship with the woman who was her antagonist in season
right.
one. And I think that that's a really, really interesting
move to
make.
Valencia starts eating donuts. So
awesome. So Valencia, you know, I am looking forward to picking it back up because I think that's a really cool way to like, don't just like add another triangle to the love, you know, a leg mm-hmm. to the triangle to replace Greg. I mean, they might eventually do that, but like, you know, go in another direction.
Well,
first,
and they've added to the other side of things, to the Josh side, which I've never been team Josh, always team Greg.
No. Yeah, team Greg.
But to the Josh side, to sort of give that, because Vincent Rodriguez is a very charming actor, even though I kind of hate that character.
Yeah.
They brought in Brittany Snow as like a new love interest for Josh, and that works really well. There's a really great musical number because Brittany Snow, as you know from Pitch Perfect, has a pretty good set of pipes, and so that has made it really it's become this weird like show about the dynamics of friendship and dealing with the aftermath of bad relationships, and I think it's just
and they also
charming.
Bumped up White Josh, who is
and it's got a really great gay relationship.
But White Josh is just one of the best, also just one of the best freaking TV characters.
Why Joe for sure. They basically there's an episode in season two where Why Joe and Daryl.
Yeah.
Go to what is essentially like the knockoff Burning Man.
Nice.
And we learn that White Josh has a real sort of older man thing. So it's pretty, but it's really funny. The way they play it is really funny. So
I'm excited to catch up.
Yeah. So Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, if you're not watching the show, like if you haven't heard about it, congratulations. Like you built a cabin in the woods. But you should watch it. It's good. It's very good.
Congratulations? Question mark. It's not the way you want to hear congratulations. Ooh, how to pivot out of that. My choice, my choice that probably shouldn't be on my list is, Bob's Burgers, because I like to have an animated show that I call attention to every year, because I think animated shows are great. And I don't want to necessarily talk about the current season of Bob's Burgers, which is airing, which is fine, but the sixth season of Bob's Burgers, whose back half was, or actually not back half, it had, what, like 19 or 20 episodes, and only five of those were in 2015.
So I just assume that it's always on.
Yeah.
Because it is always on.
That's the weird thing, is that new Bob's Burgers will go like long stretches without being on, and it will be hard to notice. And then they'll come back with like a spat of five new ones, and then they'll take like a month off for like, you know, baseball or whatever, and then come back with like just the rest. So it seems like it's always on, but if you're someone who watches Bob's Burgers religiously like me, you definitely notice the gaps. They're almost as painful as the DC CW show gaps that take months off my life. But not important. Those shows definitely not in the top 10. Bob's Burgers is, you know, an animated show about a family that runs a burger shop. And it's settled into, you know, sixth and seventh seasons, becoming one of those animated sitcoms that I think is taking over what used to be the core position of the sitcom in our lives, which is we could come back to something that's familiar and watch an adventure with characters we sort of know the shape of, and we could have, you know, situational plots that twist these characters in ways that aren't completely out of their wheelhouse, but slightly. Bob's Burgers is really great, I think, in the first three seasons for transitioning the Tina character from just being awkward into being like an actual character.
The best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since then, it's done the rest of the supporting cast. So by the end of season six, basically every side character that's coming back or coming in for the first time is somebody that I want to see again, whether they be celebrity voiced or not, because I've just, they've become my animated family. So it used to be like The Simpsons, and now it's probably going to be Bob's Burgers, which, you know, what are you going to do? Time, man. Time.
How does time work? I will say this about Bob's Burgers. I think it might be the only reason I still have a Hulu subscription. Yes. Because basically, I for a long time used Hulu as... Well, and I watch... And this is a show that'll probably... It's like an honorable mention, but I watch Casual, which I like on Hulu, but it's only on for like 6 weeks out of the year, it feels like.
Yeah.
And but I used to watch all the CW shows. I used to watch Daily Show pretty much every day. And I used to use it to watch South Park. But then I got through all of South Park and dropped the Daily Show this year because I can... If Trevor Noah does something good, the internet will... Twitter will let me know. The CW shows are now on the CW app. So Hulu, every time I flip on Hulu, the only thing that's there to watch is, and the Criterion collection's gone and now it's on Filmstruck.
Oh yeah.
So,
oh really? I didn't know that. Yeah. So, like, why do I even have Hulu?
So like for a while there, I was like, well, yeah, why do I even have Hulu? But then I remember that, both myself and my roommates who use the same Hulu account, watch Bob's Burgers a lot. It's like the going to bed show that everybody mm-hmm. in my household watches.
It's one of the few shows that both me and my girlfriend watch. So it's like we have to tell each other if one of us notices there's a new Bob's Burgers before the other one does. So that's probably why it's on my best of 2016 list. Whether or not it's on yours, listener, your mileage may vary. But it doesn't mean it's not good.
It is a very good show. Gene's the best.
It is. Gene's the best. Tina's the best.
Tina.
Louise is the best. All the kids are the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bob always telling them they're horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Also the best.
My favorite thing about Bob's Burgers is, and I know this is probably tacky to say because everybody does this, but the names of the burgers on the chalkboard behind him in every episode.
Oh, yeah.
The pun. I love puns, so...
Yeah, there's a whole Bob's Burgers cookbook that was based on a Tumblr. Yeah, yeah. So I've made the Totally Radish burger, and at some point I'm going to make the coleslaw burger that also has a hilarious pun I can't remember. But yeah, I'm starting to make these burgers. It's been fun. Bob's cartoon burgers to real burgers.
My friend, when she you know, when she became a mom, when you become a mom, I think you start saying things like in a tone of voice that you never would before you were a mom. Anyway, point being, long story short, she started saying, "All right," like Linda. And whenever she does it, I just mimic it back at her so she can hear herself. And I go, "All right, dance with mommy." Yeah. So Linda Belcher impressions are really fun. All right.
All right. Joanna, tell us why The Crown is on your list.
Oh my God, you guys, The Crown is so good. Here's the thing. Before it premiered, The Crown was being touted as like the most Vanity Fair show you could possibly imagine. And I was sort of turning my nose up at it. As much as I love British costume drama, I was like, I don't give a fuck about the royals. House of Windsor can go screw. I don't care. And then I watched it. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. And I care so much. It's from Peter Morgan, who wrote The Queen, which was the film starring Helen Mirren about Queen Elizabeth. And he also wrote the play The Audience, which was about Queen Elizabeth starring Helen Mirren. So this dude has Queen Elizabeth like on the brain. And The Crown, which is the first, you know, Netflix premiered the first ever proposed, I think it's 6 seasons, which will track Queen Elizabeth all through the decades up until now. But it starts with her coronation. And, you know, the start of her reign, the death of her father and the start of her reign. And stars Claire Foy as Elizabeth, Matt Smith is a delightfully shitty, douchey Prince Philip. John Lithgow as Winston Churchill, and a number of other like luminary British actors. Jared Harris as King George. It made me cry. It made me laugh. I thought it was incredible. And I'm just really stumping for The Crown because I think it's gotten positive reviews. People like it, but I don't think it's broken through to people who wouldn't watch a British costume drama anyway. And I really do think it has crossover appeal. So there's just really, really good human drama in this story. I'm sorry. I know it sounds like I'm going to cry, but it's really just my voice is wearing out. this is the fifth podcast I've done today. But yeah, The Crown. It's, you know, when I stopped watching it, I started watching it again. That's how much I loved it. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's probably the most glowing review of The Crown that I've heard. So now maybe I'll watch it.
Maybe you will. I feel like we're giving each other like too much homework.
I know.
Watching homework right now.
There's a lot of watching homework. I might dip my foot in it. It sounds like not for me. Do they talk about banking?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. We're getting
no,
back
it's about, are you kidding me? Like there's religion. It is totally for you. It's about like, you know, especially for Game of Thrones fans, like this is about, you know, people who want to follow their hearts, but they can't because of like duty to like ruling and rules of parliament and shifting loyalties and diplomacy and all this sort of stuff. Like it's very, and it's not as soapy as I think you think it might be. And it's just very smart. And the way that they're very clearly setting up the more familiar drama of the royal family that we know of in like Diana and Kate and all this others and like Meghan Markle and Harry and all the stuff that's like to come. It's really brilliant. I'm a huge fan.
All right.
The Crown.
The Crown.
Believe me or not, but you should believe me.
Well, let's go to another one that I have yet to give a try. Neil, explain to me why I'm wrong for missing the girlfriend experience.
Well, I mean, you probably just don't have stars. That's why most people haven't watched this show.
That's certainly that, and like telling the Golden Globes that I can't watch Ray Donovan because I don't have Showtime are like the two things, the two pay services that most often come up.
But The Girlfriend Experience is a show from. It's sort of loosely based on the movie that Steven Soderbergh made with Sacha Grey, which was a pretty good movie. But more importantly, it was created by Lodge Kerrigan and Amy Simetz. Amy Simetz, who has collaborated numerous times with Shane Carruth, who did Upstream Color, and like Amy Simons is like the indie movie every person. Like she's in all the indie. She's also in Alien Covenant, which is awesome. But she was in like You're Next and The Sacrament and Possession and like all these like really good indie movies. And she's a super talented writer. And she and Lodge Kerrigan created this show in which Riley Keough plays a, basically, she's a college student. She's in law school. That's right. She's in law school. It's been a while since I watched it. She's in law school and she finds this friend in law school who is a call girl, very high class call girl. And she starts doing it herself. And it's all about her sort of evolution. And it's what I found really interesting is it's a very interesting exploration of power and motivation and money and how it sort of subverts the more traditional stories that you see about the sex work profession, where it's like, you know, it's somebody looking to get out of a bad situation, and it's, you know, always it's a means to an end. And there's a lot about her story that does not line up with that. And I think that the main character of Christine is a very fascinating character. It's also one of those Starz shows that's super sexy and very dirty. And so people are into it for that reason. But it's real classy. Trust me, it's real classy. But it has some really great, like Paul Sparks, who was awesome on House of Cards. He played the journalist that was writing the book about the...
Oh, yeah.
So that dude is in it. He's one of the main characters. It's got Amy Simons is in it. It's got Caitlin Shell plays like the friend. And it's just really well done and really interesting and just sort of a different spin on the... See, the dog loves it.
The dog is super like,
we watch it together.
Super nice.
Like you're talking up the girlfriend experience, right?
But it's also a very similar to when we talked about Fleabag. It's, well, it's a little longer. It's 13, 27-minute episodes. So it's, you know, like a six-hour investment. And it's just really, really solid. I don't know. It's hard to explain without getting too crazy spoilery about where it all ends up. But it's a really interesting show about a woman, how she handles her sexuality and how it relates to power and how it relates to her getting what she wants in life. So that's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, gotta think about getting Starz, or maybe like
you get it. Oh, I know what you need to get it for American Gods. Obviously, your favorite right. Neil Gaiman book.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So when you get it for American Gods, watch The Girlfriend Experience to cleanse the palate.
Yep, Starz 2017. Here we go. But all right, before we get to our last two choices each, we are going to take another quick break. And we're back with another hot pick from yours truly. I'm going to pick our Game of Thrones follow-up, if you happen to be watching it live, and say Silicon Valley this season managed to course correct after a second season that was in horrible trouble of becoming just Geek Entourage. But I think the addition of Stephen Tobolowsky is this season's new boss, who was obsessed with putting the processing technology into a box, was enough of the plot to provide satire about what we do with creativity versus enterprising and sort of how the people who create it feel about it, which is good because Silicon Valley at its best is actually saying something about creativity and like these like weird man children that we, you know, reward for being brilliant coders with the profiles of like pro athletes or movie stars. But at its worst is just showing us awkward people in those trappings. So I think that season 3 was probably the best season in terms of actually finally getting to where Mike Judge can really do his best Mike Judginess on the Silicon Valley that he's satirizing. The first season was a great arc, I think, but that was just establishing the characters. When you have people like Zach Woods, who has been around for three seasons now and sort of developed his Jared into something that can hold his own side plot lines and then still be the best thing in Ghostbusters reboot. I think it's...
Stole my Ghostbusters joke.
Yeah, that's right.
I was just going to say that when Ghostbusters starts and Zach Woods shows up, and I'm just like, yay, Zach Woods! I love him. I love everything he does.
There's a outtake reel on the Ghostbusters special edition that has a whole bunch more things that he was riffing while giving the tour guide of that house, and they're all great. Zach Woods is great.
Nice.
But you should also... support him on Silicon Valley, which might be good next season again. Maybe check in because seasons kind of go up and down. But I dug this season. Back on track. Yeah. Joanna, Westworld was a very ambitious show with very ambitious goals.
I'm sorry. I feel like this episode is just like, Joanna, why is your list your list?
It was just presented to us as a very nice little puzzle box that some people focused on, I guess, Rubik's cubing more than others. You were previously talking about how you liked being involved with it. Do you think that Westworld had a successful first season as a television show, or is this participation fun and being so right about things that you guessed?
It
can be that. I'm not gonna say it can't be that.
What I want to say is that where's my train of thought? Okay. I think parts of Westworld really, really worked stupendously well. I would name like the Tandy Newton stuff as a thing that worked really, really well for me. I think some of the Evan Rachel Wood, Jimmy Simpson, Ed Harris stuff did not work as well for me. It was a shameful waste of James Marsden throughout the season. But I think they're kind of treating this season as prequel for what they want to do in the future, which is an interesting thing to do for an entire season. But all that being said, I guess I would put Westworld here for potential more than anything else. I feel really optimistic about season two. And I think they're not going to try to be as tricksy and sleight of handy in season two as they were in season one. And I think that will be to, you know, the better of the show. And you just have a lot of great actors and great roles and a premise that's really rife for a lot of interesting drama. So maybe I'm premature in putting it on the list. Maybe it should be like season two on the list, but we'll see. It might all fall apart in season two. But
check back in 2 years.
Yeah, but I that's right. I forgot. In 2018. But yeah, I just really love talking about the show. It was a great platform for a lot of fun performances. Like, you know, people roll their eyes and say Anthony Hopkins could like read the phone book and it would be interesting television. But, you know, the truth of the matter is he made
he's
a
in the new Transformers movie, so be careful what you wish for.
Someone made a YouTube video. I want to look up the exact sorry, let me do this really boring Googling right now. Someone made this really interesting. Yeah. It's called Westworld : What Makes Anthony Hopkins Great? And it's a breakdown of his conversation with Teresa in episode 4. And someone just like for over eight minutes. And when I clicked play on this video, I was like, I'm not watching this video for 8 minutes. Are you kidding me? And then I watched the whole 8 minutes because it's a really fascinating breakdown of all the acting choices that Anthony Hopkins is making in this scene. And it made me really admire everything that he does. He got a lot of really shitty exposition that he had to deliver, and he did it so beautifully. And yeah, I'm just excited for this opportunity to explore a new world. It might disappoint me in the end, but I'm in it. I'm in it to win it, so. Yeah.
That's fair.
I mean, by season 3, Westeros world isn't gonna
Ugh. Please never.
I'm glad you've joined me in my immediate disdain for Westeros worlds.
I'm kind of for it still. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. That's the ambivalence that's going to let evil in the back door, Neil. we'll see how it goes. Speaking of letting evil in the back door from the upside down, Neil, Stranger Things is on your list, and their second season currently shooting.
Yeah. They're going to do a whole another one.
More Strange Things.
Yeah, I guess. What is there to say about Stranger Things that hasn't already been said? I feel like when the first poster for the show came out, people who were children of the Spielberg era were on the hook, and then the show delivered plenty, if not more than enough of that feeling to really nail it down. So I think absolutely one of the best shows of the year, definitely one of the best phenomenons of the year, one of the best TV narratives of the year, because it showed that Netflix was really investing in very talented people and giving them a lot of creative freedom, which I think is something we've seen a lot now from Netflix. You know, we talk about The Crown and shows that just have a very unique and distinct style and are very much products of their creators. And, you know, I think your mileage is always going to vary depending on the subject matter, but I think Stranger Things really, really was in my sweet spot. So, you know, if you want to hear more, so we did a whole episode about Stranger Things, so you can hear that too.
I have a question this year where O.J. Simpson Made in America is being considered a documentary film. Mm-hmm. Do you think Stranger Things was partially as successful because it found the length for like a Netflix binge watched series that like it doesn't have the, you know, Jessica Jones or Luke Cage or Arrested Development, like, sagging middle?
Yeah, I mean, it's real tight. But I think you nailed it. It really is the show that was created to perfectly... It matched both the nostalgia that the audience is into these days, it matched the platform that it was on, which was Netflix. Like, it was a show that was just sort of perfectly molded into from its environment. So not only did the Duffer Brothers have a very specific sort of world that they wanted to build, but they also seemed to have known that this was going to be the perfect binge watch show. Whereas, there are other shows out there like Westworld that maybe wouldn't work as good as a binge and should have been on HBO once a week. And so I think, yeah, I think it's the marriage of what we see from the future of bingeable shows, which I think is sort of a category unto itself. Like, there are shows that you can binge, and then there are other shows that maybe better suited week to week. So, I think there's a little bit of innovation there, even though there are other shows that have sort of done that too.
I'm all in for season two. I think it's really bold that your season two announcement is the episode titles of all your episodes.
Right.
It's like, whoa, really, really locking yourselves in there before casting and all that. Good to know. I mean, I wish Star Wars did that. Maybe. Maybe I don't.
Wish Star Wars would just tell us what the next one's called. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we'll hopefully know soon. Yay. My next pick is Documentary Now, the comedy series with Bill Hader and Fred Armisen doing impressions of documentaries for half an hour. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, that's what it is. If you have seen it, I wasted your time because each one's kind of different depending on which documentary it's based on. Because of that, I'm highlighting season two probably because they mostly did documentaries that I'd seen, but mostly because their premiere episode, The Bunker, was based on The War Room, the documentary about the Clinton campaign. and the James Carville impression in the episode is hilarious. Bill Hader might be my favorite Bill Hader performance of the year.
He used to do that on SNL. He did a it's amazing.
Yeah. But like bring it back into the war room where he gets to actually do like pure Carville was great.
It's amazing.
Watched that movie tons in like journalism school of my college, and it was great to revisit it. Same for The Globesman, which is a spoof on The Salesman, which is a Maisel's documentary. Maisel's? That's how you pronounce it. The guys who did Great Gardens. Later on, the really early documentarians, Albert, David, Maisels. I usually only read it. But once again, something that I ended up seeing a lot in college, and then suddenly these guys come along and do a comedy spoof on it. Documentary Now is one of those comedies that is really benefits if you are very familiar with the subject matter. So while season one had a couple of ones that really hit with me, Grey Gardens one specifically, season two was full of a lot more, and I haven't even talked about the Talking Heads one, which you should really look up their spoof of Stop Making Sense. But yeah, something different every week, so if you want to roll the dice on something being funny and maybe aren't a huge fan of SNL like I'm not, Documentary Now is sort of how I fill in my fix.
Nice.
All right, that's going to bring us to our final pick, which we all share. So I saved it to last, which
maybe
I guess
that
is...
means it's a best show of the year. But before we get into that, I'm gonna, in the theme of that show, I'm gonna say I feel like Joanna Robinson was the only one who had her TV show picks cross-examined in this episode. And I don't know why. All right, that's all.
That was on Dave. No. I didn't do anything.
I know.
I support all your picks.
All right.
I contributed something to Stranger Things and Black Mirror. Really, if we've talked about it on this podcast before, I felt like I needed to interrogate something. But mostly, I like interrogating Joanna. So, Joanna, what was American Crime Story? The fictionalized version of the O.J. Simpson trial. The Storm of Spoilers best television show of 2016.
I'll tell you why. Because I had something else in my number five slot. I think
you're wrong. Neil, why is American Crime Story? No, I'm sorry. I think it was
Insecure, which is a great show, great runner-up. Yeah. And then I saw Neil's list, which had American Crime Story, and I was like, oh, holy shit. I can't have the list without American Crime Story on it. So I bumped Insecure, American Crime Story, clearly number one. I mean, for me, it's actually a tie between The Crown and American Crime Story for my favorite show of the year. But American Crime Story has that added value that we talked about before of everyone watching it and being obsessed with it. It tapped in so beautifully to the gender politics of 2016, actually presaged, I don't think I pronounced that word correctly, some of the stuff that we would see with Hillary Clinton in the Marsha Clark stuff, also, of course, held up a mirror to a lot of the ugly racial stuff that's happening in the country right now and has been for decades. So it did all that while also forcing us to re-examine this thing that, the three of us are old enough to have lived through and, really, really reckon with the way in which it launched our culture forward as sort of the genesis for reality television. And, and then so all of that extra stuff beneath that was a really soapy, fascinating story to watch with great performances from the like of Courtney B. Vance, Sarah Paulson, Sterling K. Brown, not Cuba Gooding Jr., John Travolta. And so, it was just a perfect storm of so many things. And just, I think, the best television we saw in 2016. What do you guys think?
I agree.
I mean, I like that assessment. It was really interesting to see the O.J. Simpson trial sort of completely recontextualized between American Crime Story and O.J. Simpson Made in America this year, at least from a media standpoint. And it's been interesting talking to everyday people since I now moved back to the place where I was when all that was going down about how perceptions have changed and what I thought they thought when it was happening versus what I thought when it was happening versus what my perception now of actual history is. And the interesting thing is all these things, be they fiction or nonfiction, are sort of expanding like a mainstream media consciousness about it, which is really fascinating to see come out of a Ryan Murphy pitch property.
Right.
I mean, I realize that he wasn't like the driving force behind it as much as he is with something like American Horror Story, but considering his series are mostly just exist to like kick up some shit, this one managed to kick up some shit in a really compelling way. Like you were saying, during Black Lives Matter, during Hillary Clinton's campaign, when ways that there could be direct like links drawn between here and now. And it's just was also a place for a lot of goofy performances right amongst like the really solid ones. And much like American Horror Story, where that also happens, it's like what you could enjoy both of them at the same time. Like I David Schwimmer saying Juice is still great.
Yeah.
I think he might have tricked me into thinking that he was acting, because like at the end I sort of felt for his character. But like obviously it was just being David Schwimmer. But yeah, I'm going to be interested to see if they're going to be able to replicate that sort of zeitgeist shifting as they go into, I believe they're going to do Katrina and then the Versace murder as their next two seasons, which at least have the potential to be as hotly debated while they're actually airing. But it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, OJ was just the lightning in the bottle for this year because it was also a subject of a really good documentary.
I'm a little worried about season two, if I'm being honest with you, because Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski, I think I pronounced that correctly, who are actually like the creators of American Crime Story, are not doing season two. And I don't think they're even doing season three. And
so it's going to go full American Horror Story.
I'm worried that it's going to go full Murphy, and like Murphy's like, you know, they're and if you listen or like read the interviews, like they did an insane amount of research for the first season. They read all the O.J. Simpson books, and there are so many of them. And so, you know, to turn around, I don't know when they're planning to turn around the season two. I know that they're also basing that on a number of great nonfiction books as well. It does have a good potential to sort of reflect themes about our government and like who our government cares about and all that sort of stuff. And then the Versace murder seems like it skews really, really hard towards Ryan Murphy, American Horror Story, soapiness. But I hope it still is able to view these true crime stories through the lens of like the way we live now. And I'm just worried that without Alexander and Karaszewski, like it's not going to be as good. We'll see.
Yeah, I also just worry that is like, I think about the F. Lee Bailey trying to get Mark Furman to say the N word on the stand. And that is a moment that I remember very vividly from my real life. Like it's a relatively you know, specific moment from a trial that happened 20 some years ago that I remember watching on television, and to then create all the drama around it and the personalities around it was really the magic sauce of American Crime Story. That's what made it so compelling. Was it was a story we already knew, but it was personalities that we were very okay with revisiting. And that's what made it really interesting. These other trials, maybe, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'm hoping that Katrina, I mean, I think they plan to balance sort of the like people on the street experience, or like in the flooded streets experience of Katrina, and then also sort of the government involvement. But I'm hoping for something like Game Change on HBO, or, you know, like something to replay a very recent political incident and play it out in like a compelling compulsively watchable way where we ingest a bunch of dry political dealings that we might have missed the first time, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It'll be interesting to see if the more recent stuff, because I feel like the thing we saw with the OJ trial this year was it was probably the exact right amount of time. You know, it was almost 20 years. So it was not only the right time for this story, but also the documentaries that came out about, you know, OJ was real hot this year. And I think that you have to have enough space to really be able to sort of contextualize with history. Although the Katrina thing, very easy to contextualize. So
yeah, well, that was back when Kanye West was just embarrassing Mike Myers and not meeting with our president-elect. It was simpler times. Simpler times. Well, guys, that was some pretty good television in 2016.
Word.
I think that I'm surprised we all came to a consensus, but it's a good consensus, and we all had smart things to say about it. So it must be true.
Joanna survived her interrogation, so that's good.
That's right. And almost survived her podcast marathoning that has been her extremely long 2016. So when we next convene, it'll be a new year, and we will have begun a new season of BBC Sherlock. Neil, have you seen all of Sherlock yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Joanna, you're caught up on Sherlock?
I sure am.
Oh, God, we all love Sherlock. It probably means it's going to be a good episode.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's going to be an intense season for Mr. Cumberbatch.
There's a lot of expanded universe to talk about.
Here's the only thing I can say, right, is that BBC is not giving out screeners for this season because they're very intensely worried about spoilers, which makes me, I have no insider information other than to say, well, someone told me the stakes are higher than they've ever been. So whatever that means. But
well, they already like fake killed him once.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So maybe someone will actually stay dead this time. That's what I'm saying. Da da da. I mean, they need to end the show someday. So.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
This show outlasted the Hobbit movies, which seems fucking weird to me. That seems like it took forever to make those movies.
So we're off. We're off next week. We're headed next time we meet up. We're headed to 221 B Baker Street, right?
Yep. Yep.
Great.
It'll be a new year. There'll be a fourth season of Sherlock that will come out. It airs on the 1st, I believe. Mm-hmm. So we could all catch up together and repivot. But until then, let's close out 2016, telling people where we could find each other on the internet. Joanna, you could almost stop talking right after you tell people.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can listen to me talk about general pop culture on the Gen Pop podcast or about the Oscar race on Little Gold Men.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
You can find me on filmschoolrejects.com, where we are beginning our dog training. No, kidding. One of these days. Where we're going to begin our 2017 preview, because once 1 year ends, that means we have to go to another year. So there's that. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Rejects. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers, and email us if you'd like to email us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find my writing at geek.com and thrillist.com. You could find my other podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com. And you all have been great. Jon Snow lives. See you in 2017.
You cry in your tea, which you hurl in the sea when you see me go by. Why so sad? Remember we made an arrangement when you went away. Now you're making me mad. Remember, despite our estrangement, I'm your man. You'll be back soon, you'll see. You remember you belong to me. You'll be back, time will tell. You remember that I served you well. Oceans rise, empires fall. We have seen each other through it all. And when push comes to shove, I will send a fully armed battalion to remind you of my love. Da 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 da.